I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake that ass up
early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Jess Hilarious, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
His 17th season on air, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Wilkos. Welcome back.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me again.
How are you?
I'm great.
Where'd you come in from?
Connecticut.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't that long.
No, I mean, you know, it's not great, but as long as the car's moving, I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah. You're celebrating your 30th year in television, like on television. I know you started as Jerry Springer's bodyguard. Yeah. And actually, the producer on the Jerry Springer show, right?
What's
did you produce the? You,
no,
you
no,
were
no,
a producer
no,
on
no,
it?
No, no.
I've seen your name in the credits on a couple of episodes.
Well, on my show, I'm an executive producer.
Absolutely,
I
know that.
But that's, I don't produce. That's just, you know, they give you the title because if my show ever won an Emmy, if I was an executive producer, I wouldn't get an Emmy. That's why they do it. So I have nothing to do with the producing of the show. But I started on the Springer show. I was a Chicago cop.
Yeah.
And
oh, okay.
They just hired some cops to do security, and I happened to be one of them. And 30 years later, I'm still here.
Did you ever expect your career to end up like
no,
this?
No, I was going to be a policeman. Like my dad was a Chicago policeman for 30 years, and he retired, and that's what I was going to do, you know, just be a cop, get my pension, and retire, but I kind of like the way it worked out.
So you didn't retire on a job?
No, I had 12 years, and 12 I could have got a pension, but I pulled it, and, you know, just 12 years was long enough, actually.
Did you have to really contemplate, like, do I leave this where I could go, or do I wait 12 years, I get my pension,
well,
I'm good for the rest of my life?
It was difficult because, you know, when I left, I had no idea. I left in 2001, and I got my show in 2007, so I never knew I was going to get my own TV show. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was crazy to even think. But my wife, who's my executive producer, and she became the executive producer of Jerry Springer, I actually came home one night, and I was covered in blood in my police uniform. And she goes, this is crazy, man. You need to, you know. She said, listen, when the Springer show's over, we're not staying, we're living on your policeman's salary. She goes, I'm a TV producer. We're going to go to L.A. or New York, and I'm going to be a TV producer, and you'll find something to do. And I said, yeah. And at that point, I was kind of burnt out being a policeman. You know, I was tired of fighting and everything and getting hurt. So I was like, okay, I'm okay with that.
When did you really start making money? At 30 years in TV, at what point did you really start making money?
So in 94, when I started, I was like an hourly guy. Mm-hmm. Then the next year, they wanted me there, so I was a week. I got weekly pay. And then I think it was 97, they gave me a contract for $75,000. Mm-hmm. So that's a part-time job, you know, and I was making, I think, $45,000 as a policeman. And then the next year, it was like 6 months later, they tore the contract up and they gave me $150,000 because the show was skyrocketing. And so I honestly thought I was like the richest guy in the world, making $150,000 part-time job. And so I guess that was when it really started. And then after that, then it kept climbing. And then obviously when I got my own show, I started making really good money.
Mm-hmm. Now you're the second longest running syndicated daytime talk show in current production. Jesus.
And I wish all those people that laughed in my face in L.A. when I did the media tour, like, they were just dogging me, man. Like, Jerry Springer's guy, he's not going to last 13 weeks, because back then it was 13-week pickups, and they're like, you're not going to last 13 weeks. And I'm like, okay, we'll see. And, you know, 30 years in TV straight with never missing a paycheck is unheard of.
So what's the key to the success, though? Like, a two-fold question. What's the key to success, and what did you learn from Jerry? Because he had a long career as well.
I'm not trying to sound like, you know, like I didn't learn anything from Jerry, but there was nothing to learn from Jerry's show because we do a completely different show, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things I learned from Jerry, like being professional, showing up on time, being always ready. And he said, hey, man, when you go, don't try to be like me or the show. Just do your own thing and you'll be fine. The really secret of my success is my wife. And I say that, and I'm not just a husband saying it about his wife. You know, if it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. And that's the truth because, you know, I had my problems about 6 years ago. I had DUI and, you know, all that. Like, she stuck with me through that, pulled me out of it. You know, I was going through things. But even, like, she knows how to produce me on my show. She knows how to do a lot of things. She kept the Springer show on the air for a lot of years. So I got the best executive producer on TV. Yeah. So, truthfully, And she knows me. She lets me be me. The first 2 years of my show were terrible. I was produced in a way that was just, I hated doing the show. I literally hated coming to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that person left, and my wife took over, and thank God. Because I definitely would not be on there.
Thank God for nepotism. That's right. I'm not mad at it.
No, they did not want to give my wife the show. So because she was the EP of Springer. Mm-hmm. You know, when Richard Domenech left the Springer show, they promoted my wife to EP. They did not want to make her the EP of my show, too. So they said, we're not giving you your wife as the EP. I said, okay. So they brought in a guy, I think he was on, like, Blind Date or Cheaters or something. I can't remember. And they said, we'd like you to interview this guy, and if you like him, you know, we're going to give this guy the show. And I said, okay. So this was a process of, like, a month. Like bringing him in, going to dinner with them. I said, fine, I like him. He's, you know, he's okay, you know. Wasn't bad, wasn't good, but kind of vanilla. But I said, okay, I can work with him. Well, during the meantime, my wife's doing my show. The ratings are going like this, second season, you know. And so I'm like, damn, man, you know, kind of want her. But, you know, they were saying, no. So this guy ended up turning the offer down, the guy that I interviewed. He's like, no, I'm not taking it. So I tell the president, I go, hey, man, so what's the story here? Like, this guy doesn't want the job. My wife's doing it, and the ratings are... He goes, yeah, okay, we're going to give you your wife. And that was it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she's the key to the success, then, clearly.
She's a huge, huge part of it.
Did you guys ever have, like, any fallouts about you not wanting... You know, of course...
We used to fight about things.
Yeah?
You know, there was, like, she would do shows... Especially there was shows like with kids and stuff, you know, and I hated doing those. I just, I don't know what it is. I don't like it. I feel like I can't relate to kids. you know, I'm not going to lie. But my wife's like, just do it, you know. And they would work, and she was right. So, like, at this stage of my career, I just, even if I don't like it, I just keep my mouth shut.
Just learn to shut up and
listen. I just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because those I'm were like,
it'll be over
episodes.
In 20 minutes, and why complain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, last week you reported that Steve Wilkos was in Just with the Mess, right?
Yeah. You had taken to social media because you watched the Wendy Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And you were actually the first celebrity that spoke up, besides myself, spoke up, you know, in favor of her about, you know, her treatment and how they made her look on the documentary. Like, and I just, you know, wanted to know in person, you know, how you felt.
Well, you know, me and Wendy, like, when I was launched, I did Wendy's radio show, and she was so nice to me.
Yeah.
And then she launched right after me, I think the year after me. And so I would always appear on a show, and I had a personal relationship with Wendy. I mean, I went to her 50th birthday party and things like that, and, you know, I saw her. And I really liked Wendy. And I don't watch daytime talk show, but I would watch her show. I thought it was really good. I was interested in it. And I liked the Hot Topic segment and all that. So I really cared about Wendy, you know? Mm-hmm. So then to show her I was in Florida, and we were flipping through, me and my wife in a hotel, and I start watching. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I think like when I was going through my struggles and, you know, at my lowest, if there was a camera in my house filming me, like, no, but my wife would never allow that to happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, she'd be like, no, we're never doing anything like that. And so it's just because, you know, especially as a woman, right? Mm. What woman wants to see her wig being like taken off and shown in that light, or they're showing her feet? She's got that some kind of problem with her feet. And, you know, come on, man. If she was in her right state of mind, she would never let anybody do that. And she's obviously suffering from alcohol, you know, being alcoholic or a drinking problem. And, you know, when you're going through something like that, I don't think you should be on camera. And that manager's like, oh, we're going to do a podcast with Wendy, and she's ready. She's not ready to do anything, man.
At all.
Come on, you know. And she should be in a treatment facility somewhere getting medical attention from doctors and everything else. And it just, to me, it was really exploitative.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people are lashing back at me like, well, you know, Wendy talk crap about her TV show. I go, she's not showing anybody in their deepest and filming them. Like, what are you talking about? You know, it's a TV show, you know?
Yeah.
It's so crazy to me how people can cheer the downfall of another human being. You know?
Especially in these times, you know, people have been so desensitized. Like, they've become so desensitized from, like, actual problems, and they're not able to separate human being from, you know, Wendy Williams, the media personality, you know, and because she would ask the questions that people wouldn't ask. She would get in the business, but that was her job.
Yeah,
that was, you know.
Exactly.
So,
and then the other thing was people like, well, she's the executive producer of that Lifetime thing. And I go, if you're not in your right mind, you consent. You know, people don't understand that. Like, you know, if you're suffering a mental breakdown, you can't really, you're not going to go into a legal binding contract for anything.
When's the last time y'all spoke?
I think I was on her show. I hosted her show with Jerry when she was on the break, and I spoke to her just before that. And, you know, she was struggling at that time. And I told her, I said, hey, listen, anytime you want to talk to me, because I've been through it. And she knew it, and we talked about it off stage the last time I appeared on the show with her. So, you know, it's just tough. And
how did you get through, because you said you had a DUI, how did you get through your troubles during that time?
I was drinking too much. And
was it stress? Was it
stress,
too much?
Depression, anxiety. I was using alcohol to help with depression, and which is probably the last thing in the world you should do.
You can afford a driver, Steve.
I could. Listen, I make no excuse. I can't tell you why I drove that day or what made me get in my car and get in it. I'm absolutely wrong. And I knew, like, my life could have changed for a lot worse that day other than just getting a DUI. I could have killed somebody or could have killed myself. And I just said, I'm not drinking anymore. Now, a lot of people can't do that, just say, I'm not going to drink anymore. But I knew it was becoming a problem in my life, and I was going to ruin everything in my life, my family, my career. And I just said, okay, I'm not 20 years old anymore. I got to take this serious and stop. And I did.
So when did it happen? Since?
What's that?
Yeah, so you haven't drank since?
Since 2018 was the last time I had a drink. Yeah.
When did it happen?
In my town, Darien.
Connecticut. That's what I'm saying. They didn't give you no Steve Wilco celebrity privilege? Like,
well, when you're involved in an accident like I was, and they had to take me to the hospital, they had to draw my blood. So there was no taking care of me.
Gotcha.
You know? And truthfully, listen, nobody wants a DUI, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants, and especially when you're in our position, you know, it's on TMZ and you get blown up. But truthfully, it was probably the best thing for me because it made me, and listen, now that I don't drink anymore, I'm very productive. I work out all the time. My marriage is great. My career is great. And, you know, alcohol was really negatively impacting all those aspects of my life, mm-hmm. you know. And I was honest about it. I mean, like, you know, I wanted to fight it so bad because you know, I started drinking when I was 14 years old. And, you know, to give up a lifetime habit like that's not easy. But I knew. And now when I look back, I go, why in the world did I ever drink? Like, you know, but. A lot of people do it.
I mean, it's fun.
The best times.
You got to do it responsibly, but it's fun.
The best times of my life were drinking. Absolutely. You know, so,
What do you say to people, cause when you think about Wendy Williams and how they showed her situation on television, but, you know, God Bless the Dead, Jerry Springer, like, people didn't even know he had cancer. So what do you say to people who feel like celebrities have an obligation to show you the bad since you've seen all the good?
Jerry didn't even tell me he had cancer, right? Yeah. Like a month before he passed away, he called me up and said, hey, because he had nothing going on in Stanford at the time. You know, Judge Jerry was over everything.
Yeah.
So he called me up and he said, hey, you want to? I'm having dinner with all his old guys, his crew, security, because they all work on my show. And I was taping that day. And I said, Jerry, I don't want to go to dinner with 20 guys and – when I'm done taping. I'm exhausted at the end of my tape day because I'm doing like six stories a day. So I said, you know, I'm going to pass. And he goes, I really want to see you, Steve. Well, Jerry, you know, doesn't talk like that. You know, I really want to see you. So I said, I'll tell you what. You go to dinner. I'm going to go home, rest a little bit. And then when you're done, you go meet me for a cigar at John Starks has a place in Stamford, Connecticut, cigar bar. So I met him there. And it was crazy because we were two guys that never talked about the glory days. Like, oh, you know, remember this, remember that. We didn't do that. He has a grandson, and my son is about the same age and are both athletes, and we would always talk about our son.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked about politics a lot and just what was happening currently in our lives. We never talked about the glory days. Mm-hmm. But that night we talked a lot about the glory days, which I didn't think anything of at the time, and it was kind of fun because we never do it. But he never said, "Hey, Steve, by the way, I'm dying of pancreatic cancer."
Wow.
And never mentioned it. But I knew something was wrong because I said, "Jerry, like, you okay?" You know, because he was like shaking really bad and stuff. He goes, no, I'm okay. And that's the kind of guy he was. He didn't even want to put that burden on me, you know, like, I'd be sad and depressed and worried about the guy. And so we had a great time, and he got up, hugged me. I love you, Steve. And I was like, well, I love you too, Jerry. Of course I love you. And that was it. And I, you know, then a month later he passed away. So
wow.
I think he, you know, that's the kind of guy Jerry was. I don't think he wanted to have people make a big deal about him. He didn't want to burden people with his illness. And so, yeah, I respect it. But again, just like with the Wendy Williams thing, when you're at your lowest, you know, and I think we've all been there, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't think you want a camera on you when you're going through that.
No.
Simple as that.
How have you dealt with his death?
You know, kind of like.
It hasn't been a year yet, right?
No, it's in April. It's coming up. It was almost like losing my father. And I always say, no man had a personal interest in me and, you know, kind of watching out for me, being there for me, than my own father. And so we were very close, and Jerry was so great to me and so generous and caring and, you know, so, yeah, I mean, it was a big loss in my life.
Yeah.
What was your craziest show from the Jerry Springer Show? Something that was just so wild.
You know, Jesus Christ. Which is my favorite drop of water in the ocean. Really, it's just a million of them. Just a funny story. Like, he was coming out with his movie Ringmaster. I think it was like, this was 1988, 1999, something like that. And he had came to me and he said, "Hey, Steve, I have to take my shirt off in the movie. So would you mind working out me a little bit? I just want to lift enough so, you know, I don't look terrible." And I said, "Okay, we'll start weightlifting." Well, we had this big fight on stage. It was two women fighting. And I had bent down to, like, break them up. And my groin just snapped in half. Like, I felt like somebody shot me. I actually thought somebody pulled out a gun and shot me. Jeez. That's how bad it was. In my groin. And I, like, I didn't know what was going on. And I crawled off backstage. I couldn't stand up. And I crawled. And a lot of people didn't even notice because the fight was going on. And I'm backstage. And I turned over. I threw up on the floor. And all of a sudden, Jerry comes walking. He looks down at me. He goes, "Are we working out tomorrow?" I was like, "Damn, Jerry, I'm dying over here."
What happened? Did you?
I tore my groin and they took to the hospital. And like I was all black and blue down there. It's just a freak injury. It just happened. Yeah. So, but it's pretty painful.
Did it take a while for things to get back working?
Right
down there.
I mean, it was black and blue, man. Jesus, I mean, like somebody hit me with a baseball bat down there.
Jesus,
it was nuts.
You couldn't get hard.
Jesus.
I didn't want to get hard.
Right. I'm scared, right?
I was afraid, man.
Damn.
Is it true that you have a human hair collection from the Jerry Springer show?
Yeah, so.
Are you trying to make a wig out of it?
No, it was so stupid, man. Like, so women would always fight and they'd be pulling each other's hair out.
Hilarious.
So one day, I took the strand of hair and I just wrapped it up in a little tiny ball.
Yeah.
Well, then after that, every time there was a fight, I would add that hair to the ball. Well, it got to be the size of like a bowling ball after, you know, like 10 years, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was so gross, man. You know, you think about all his hair, and it was all different colors, and, you know, it was a lot of probably wig hair in there. And I used to just keep, we had three chairs. It was Jerry, the executive producer, and me, and then my wife. So there was four chairs. And right behind my chair was in a corner, and I would just throw this human ball of hair back there. And then I got my own show, so I don't even know what happened to that big ball of hair.
Oh, wow.
I hope nobody kept it.
Do you remember the first time the audience started chanting Steve, 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 and why? Like was that organic?
Yeah, it was organic, and I couldn't tell you when the first time it happened. But I do remember, I was coming up on stage a lot when the show shifted and they started having the fights. And then I would sit in between the guests sometimes, you know, because it was just getting crazy. And I remember nobody knew who I was, so Jerry came up on stage and was like, "You know, you're here loud, and, you know, what's your name?" And I said, "Steve," and I think people just were like, "Steve," you know, back then. And, you know, it was crazy because in Chicago we had these great audiences. You know, we're right off Michigan Avenue and NBC Tower, and so the audience would be packed. It was like probably the Coliseum back with the Romans, you know, feed the Christians to the lions, because that was kind of the atmosphere in the Springer Studios back then.
You remember the first time you got recognized in the public when you was like, "Wow,
I remember walking out of the studio and the first time a kid asked me for my autograph, because this was before cell phones, and, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners can't even imagine it. There wasn't no cell phones back then. But he asked me for my autograph, and I said, "Dude, why would you want my autograph?" You know, I was like, "No." And he's like, "No, please," you know. I said, "Okay, here you go." And that was kind of like the first time I'm like, "Man, I guess I'm a part of this show," you know?
Absolutely.
All of that had to lead to you getting your own show, though. Like, there had to be some producers back there like, "Yo, Steve is pretty really popular."
I don't know if that was the case. I think what really cemented it was when Jerry went on Dancing with the Stars. And, you know, because I was a big part of the show. So when he went on Dancing with the Stars, they said, "We can't shut the production of the show down. He'll probably be gone a week. You know, he's terrible. He'll get voted off right away." Well, and back then we taped 3 days a week and we would do two shows each day. So six shows a week. I did all six. And then they underestimated Jerry because audience loved Jerry and they kept voting him to stay on. So I think he was on 6 weeks. Well, I ended up doing 30 shows. And when those 30 shows aired, they rate it really well. So I don't think anybody was sitting around going, "Hey, let's give this guy a show." I think a lot of them looked at me like he's a cop. Who cares? And but when I did all those shows and they rated well, then somebody said, "Hey, let's give this guy shows on Monday." So Jerry would tape Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. he'd come in and do Tuesday, Wednesday. I would do Monday shows. And then after that, I got a phone call and said, hey, we're giving you your own show.
Wow. Well, I hope that person got a raise, damn it.
I know, right?
They didn't give me one. They barely paid me a little more than what I was making on the Springer show. I was like, this is crazy, man. Like, the first offer was less than what I was making. So I don't think anybody even knew what I was making on Springer. And so I was like, that's less than what I'm making now. And I'm going to make less. I said, no, I didn't, you know. So they gave me a little more. So, yeah, the first year was kind of rough.
You said you and Jerry used to talk politics. So being that this is an election year, is that something that we might see in the 17th season?
No, not on my show. No, we've never talked politics on the show. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, when you're on the air so long, because people, like, when I'll come September, I'll be doing the big media, you know, for season 18. And everybody will say, oh, you know, is there any changes coming up for the season? And the answer is no, because when you've been on this long, people tune in. They expect a certain show, lie detector test, the DNA test. So you're not going to fool. Like, people always said to me, well, why does Maury do DNA every day? I go, because people watch.
Yeah.
Well, simple as that. Change. Like, you know, you don't mess around with it.
I was going to ask, with you being an ex-police officer, what do you think about how the world is taking towards cops now? Like, things have changed, right? Now, with bail reform, you know, criminals are getting out faster. It feels like cops are scared now to do anything because everything's on camera.
Well, I think in New York, then they take away their immunity. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be personally sued, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we didn't have that when I was a cop. And I mean, who's going to jeopardize, you know, their financial well-being to, you know. Listen, I think, I'll put it this way. When I was coming out of the Marines in 1989, I wanted to be a cop, just like my dad. And it was a good job, you know, like you got pension, benefits, all this stuff. If I was coming out of the Marines today, I would never take that job, not in a million years. So, I mean, I think policemen really are, it's not a good job. You know, you fight all the time, and like you said, you make arrests, and people are back out on the streets, especially here in New York. And Chicago's the same way, so, you know, it's not a good job.
Do you have a timetable on when you want the show to run its course?
I love doing the show, and I'm only 60. God, I was 30 when I started on TV.
I don't think 60 is old.
Yeah, it is. Come on, man.
No.
When you say 60, see, you don't think it's old because you're not there yet. When you become 60, it sounds old, and it is old, you know. But, so the answer to your question is, I love doing the show. I enjoy it. It provides me with a great life. So I'm never going to say I'm going to quit. But, you know, TV's changing. It's difficult and it's tough now, you know. And now they're exploring all these different avenues to bring revenue into the show. But I would definitely like to hit 20. I'm at 17. I'm going to season 18. Mm-hmm. Nice round number, 20. If it would go longer, I guess I would do it. You know, because I just finished taping last Wednesday. And now I won't go back to work until last week in August. So I get a nice break.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I do have one last question. I look at Dr. Phil, right? And people say Dr. Phil went from fixing relationship problems to focusing on fixing America's problems. Like, we saw him at the border and things like that. What do you think of that?
You know, it's funny you say that because I just saw him on The View talking about how COVID affected kids.
Yep.
And the women on The View were like, oh, well, you know, we saved kids from, you know, getting COVID. And he's like, hey, man, kids weren't getting COVID anyways.
That's right.
You know, you know. And we really hurt our children by not having them in school. And he made a great point where I never even thought about kids that were in bad situations. And now we weren't following up on them, like kids that were being molested or abused at home. Mm-hmm. All these, you know, agencies that were responsible for that. We're sending them into the home, being constantly with the abuser. And so I thought he made a really wonderful point. And so I think Dr. Phil is, you know, first of all, he's a very educated guy, right? I think he's a very smart guy. So I just thought that was really a great point, and he was making some really good points about how kids, we've hurt them with their development. Teen suicides, you know, just went through the roof with this pandemic. Because I don't know how you guys reacted to it, but, you know, just being home all the time in the same spot, not going out, everybody fearful, that's tough on your psyche, you know. And so, like, with kids, they weren't getting COVID. They weren't really, you know, a risk. We should have been sending them back to school and getting out there and socializing and everything else. So I had a lot of respect for Dr. Phil for doing that. And listen, he has the platform where he can make that change. I don't have that platform.
You don't think so?
No, not with my show. You know, and Dr. Phil, I think it's a good move for him, and I enjoy listening to him.
You don't think they would accept something like that from you if you decided to?
Not on my show. I'd have to have a different platform other than my show. My show, my fans, I don't think would be down for it.
Yeah, you have a very set formula.
Yeah,
and people like it,
and I just. Yeah. It wouldn't be good.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly it works, man. 17 seasons. Congratulations.
Congratulations. That's right. The Steve Wilkos Show in his 17th season. And thank you for joining us again.
1 second. What is your skin regimen? You do not look like a 60-year-old white man. You do not. I'm sorry.
I shave. I don't do any, like, you know, my old publicist, Gary Rosen, he'd give me all these skincare products and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're probably all shoved in my drawer in my bathroom, never touched or broken. And my wife, like, she's like, damn it, your skin's so beautiful.
Right. Like, you don't do anything?
I don't do anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
You aging like a black person.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, damn.
It's Steve Wilkos.
Yes.
Well, I'm not the whitest guy in the world either. As well.
It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Thank you.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast hosts Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.